Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Hello and welcome to that seminal moment, the 200th episode of Let Me Explain.
Let Me Explain with Sean Defoe, a News Talk original.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe wherever it is you're listening. And this is quite the episode, 200 Let Me Explain podcast that we put out over the last few years. And I missed the celebrations for the 100th episode, so very happy to be in situ. For this one, Let Me Explain, it came about as the brainchild of my editor, John Kyo, who wanted to set up a weekly explainer podcast, and just a few short years later, we've turned up 200 episodes. We've won New Podcast of the Year at the Irish Podcast Awards and been nominated for Radio Station Podcast of the Year 4 times at the Imro Radio Awards, as well as having a live show at the All Together Now Festival this year, which is not bad going. It's all right. We've been doing pretty well, I think. And on this episode, we wanted to look back at some of the highlights from the last few years, bits of favourite episodes that showcase the very, very wide range of topics that we have covered in that time. I've learned a lot. Hopefully you at home have learned a lot as well, and those who listen regularly. Now, let's flash back to one of the very first episodes we did. The first one, in fact, to be nominated for an award. What would happen if Ireland was attacked by a nuclear weapon?
This is an insight into the thinking in Moscow.
To put what Kisilov said in context, as if half a kilometre high walls of water weren't enough, let's look at the last time one of these bombs was dropped in anger.
The second atom bomb was dropped on Hiroshima. And
this is a British movie tone report.
Most of the city appears to have been obliterated. 4 square miles of desolation are reported.
The bomb that did that, called Little Boy, had a 15 kiloton payload, or as President Truman put it, 20,000 tons of TNT.
It is an atomic bomb. It is a harnessing of the basic power of the universe. The force from which the sun draws its power has been loosed.
Now, the one Mr. Kisilov talked about would be 100,000 kilotons, or 6,666 times more powerful than the one which leveled Hiroshima. Now, the idea of a 100 megaton bomb is pretty scary, but not realistic. The Soviets had such a bomb in the 60s, and they actually considered it too big to even test.
If we did have to don the gas masks, just how bad would it be?
If a 100 megaton bomb were dropped over the GPO, for example, everything in Dublin between Ballymun and Dundrum would be vaporised. Most homes would collapse and fires would rip through buildings with huge fatalities in a further blast radius stretching from Balbriggan to Greystones. Thermal radiation would leave people with third-degree burns in a zone radiating from Dundalk in the north to Mullingar and Portlaoise in the west and as far down as Gorey in Wexford, while glass windows would shatter as far away as Newry.
And the nuclear theme has been one we have returned to on this podcast, including covering the time Ireland wanted to create its own nuclear power plant.
Well, on the criteria that we'd worked out, Carnsore came out as the best site as for our purpose, and we selected it accordingly. So the criteria being that we had to get adequate foundations, rock foundations, adequate cooling water. It had to be fairly or as near as possible to our transmission lines, a certain amount of isolation. We also, on the social situation, we didn't want an area of very high amenity where we'd be disturbance, and we wanted an area where the employment would be of benefit to the local.
How many jobs would it bring?
Well, during construction, it could peak out at about 1,000, and for a permanent, about 200, 250, with a fairly high proportion of professional or semi-skilled people in that.
Does the ESB plan any further nuclear stations?
Well, it's a little bit far ahead, yes, but it is possible that, through the 80s into the 90s, there will possibly be a series of them.
Irish engineers travelled all over the world to see how these nuclear reactors worked and how they might build one themselves at Carnsore Point on the southern tip of Wexford.
As the oil crisis takes increasing toll of power users throughout the world. Irish engineers here to study technical and safety techniques. During the last 8 years, ESB engineers have undergone training in nuclear stations in the United Kingdom, United States, Canada, and Germany. The triplicated control systems and the fail-safe mechanisms make an accident virtually impossible.
This British movie tone report effectively acting like an infomercial for nuclear power.
The nuclear station at Obrichheim on the River Neckar in Germany. It's been in commission for 6 years and provides some idea what a nuclear station in Ireland might look like. Apart from vineyards, similar countryside to Ireland. And life in the area virtually unchanged with the coming of nuclear power. The children play safely as before. The potato harvesting and life in the fields goes on as for centuries past. The apples in no way affected by the nearby nuclear station. And the fish are reported to be bigger in the purified water outfall.
Bigger and with three eyes and extra fins for nutrition. But of course, there is another side to nuclear power. People across the world were no stranger to the idea of a nuclear fallout. The first bombs dropped on Japan in 1945 and the Cuban Missile Crisis of the early 60s made sure of that. It led in many parts to Cold War hysteria, including in Galway, where in 1966 there were plans to build a nuclear bunker, leading to this rather dramatic report.
Now, are you worried about the bomb? Do you think it will fall someday?
No, I don't know really. I'm not worried about it anyway.
Are you yourself worried about the bomb?
Well, not really. I don't think much about it, like, you know.
Do you not expect it to fall at any stage?
Well, I hope our Blessed Lady and our Divine Son will stop it.
But it hasn't all been so serious. We do cover the big items on this podcast, like the World Conquer Championships.
But if you were somehow living under a rock and haven't been following the World Conquer Championships, you may be unaware of its long and storied history. The BBC attended the 1971 Games.
The championship begins with the time-honoured greeting by the Conquer King of Ashton, dressed in his traditional costume. At this international level, Conquers is no longer a kid's game. For a start, no one under 18 is allowed to take part, and there's a strict set of very adult rules. No baked or pickled conkers are allowed, and the bootlace has to be at least 8 inches long. It's a very serious business. Eventually, from the 64 original entrants, the two finalists emerge. Martin Deutschlander, a 49-year-old ex-German prisoner of war who stayed in Britain after the war and is now a local tractor driver, and Tim Dix, 1 year younger at 48, a diesel engine inspector in a local factory. First to hit was Tim Dix with his three strokes. And then it was the German's turn. But with his last stroke, Martin Deutschlander shattered his conker. The new conker champion of the world, Tim Dix.
What's the secret of this conquering business?
There's no secret. It's just luck that you get the good conker and a good clean strike.
Modern conquerors, though, think luck is less of a factor.
I'd love to say there was quite a lot of luck involved, but actually we've got people who've won it 3 and 4 times, so there must be an element of skill involved. So it can't just be luck. But the conquerors that you draw, you are allowed to reject them, but they've got to have something to do with it, and technique, I think, has got a lot to do with it.
And of course, one of the things we love doing is taking a slightly different look at history, including ranking the worst popes to ever take the office, including one of the most famous, Borgias. As Borgia's power grew, so did the number of his enemies, with detractors accusing him of holding orgies in the Vatican, poisoning his way to office, and even of incest with one of his daughters after an unexplained child emerged in the Borgia family. So convoluted was the plotting of Alexander VI, it inspired one of the 20th century's most notorious film characters, Vito Corleone.
Now you come to me and you say, Don Corleone, give me justice. Till I last with respect. You don't offer friendship. You don't even think to call me godfather. You said you'd come into my house on the day my daughter's to be married, and you asked me to do murder. Money. Bono said. Bono said. What have I ever done to make you treat me so disrespectfully?
Pope Alexander VI died in 1503 after falling ill at a banquet. His son, Césaire, also fell ill, but managed to recover. And while historians mostly suspect malaria of all things, there are those who believe the gangster Pope fell foul of poison at the dinner table. From gangsters to Game of Thrones, our second entry on the list of pretty terrible popes was the 202nd man to hold the office. Bartholomew Prignano was educated in Avignon in France and became the Archbishop of Cremona near Naples in the early 1300s. A few years later came the death of Pope Gregory. Now, he had been one of a number of popes to rule at Avignon in southern France rather than in Rome, and the Italian cardinals, looking to change that, began to scheme and plot to put one of their own on the throne. Naturally, that was opposed by the French cardinals, and a split emerged in the conclave. Looking to break that impasse but still get their own way, the Italian cardinals did a rare thing. They looked outside the conclave, away from one of their own, for a consensus candidate. Enter Bartolomeo Prignano. The Italians and the French saw a mild-mannered archbishop that they could control and mould, while other voters saw someone who had a foot in both camps, having been educated in France and being Italian. He was elected Pope on the 8th of April 1378 and became Pope Urban VI. But the level-headed bishop became a hostile pope. He quickly developed a reputation for flying into a rage with cardinals. And fearing this new pope and thinking he was favouring his fellow Italians, the French cardinals fled Rome. Months later, they declared the appointment of Urban null and void and declared a new pope from France, Clement VII, who became the anti-pope. Thus started the Western Schism of the Catholic Church, a battle as fit for the throne of Westeros as the throne of the Vatican. One of my personal episodes, though, had to be when we relived a ghost story from my own childhood about the famous Loftus Hall. The stranger quickly proved himself a hit with the guests at Loftus Hall. Charming, well-spoken, witty, the entire company was hanging on his every word, and none more so than Anne Tottenham. Finally, she thought, a handsome young man of marrying age has come into my life. Anne showed him around the manor, stopping for a particularly long time in her favourite part of the house, the tapestry room. Just away from the roaring fire, they spoke beside two windows, which on a clear day looked across the water to Dunmore East. Anne was already head over heels. Could this be who she'd prayed for? Her father, though, well, he was growing wary of the strange captain who came in the night and was paying so much attention to his daughter. He bade them both come back to the drawing room to play cards with the rest of the party. Lord Loftus was quite good at cards, or at least other people had the good sense to let him win often enough to abate his temper. Yet, hand after hand, the stranger won. The more the red rose in her father's cheeks, the more delighted Anne became with this dashing stranger who dared challenge the Lord of the Manor. She was sick of the sycophants who usually came over, eyes downcast. So lost was she in the excitement that as the man dealt cards after winning yet another hand, she dropped one on the floor. Reaching below the table, she gave a start to see the card lying face up, the Ace of Spades. Still under the table, her gaze shifted to the stranger's seat. Instead of the sturdy sailing boots she could have sworn she saw earlier, were two grotesque, hairy, stinking cloven hooves. Anne screamed, knocking her chair to the ground as she scrambled away from the table. She looked with horror at the face of the stranger she'd been so taken with. Gone was the easy smile, the inviting eyes, that charming self-confidence, replaced by a toothless grin. Eyes like the burning coals atop Hook Head widening in sick delight. The candles scattered around the room erupted in flame as the stranger began a low, guttural, cackling laugh. He seemed bigger than before, huge. The other guests scrambled away, unsure of whether to be more afraid of the deranged man in their midst or the candelabra suddenly spurting flame. Just as it seemed he could surely get no bigger without brushing the ceiling, the stranger burst into flame himself. The fire roared and exploded, sending charred lumps of wood flying. Surely, this could be none but the devil himself. He took flight, roaring through the ceiling in a burst of flame, shooting out the roof and disappearing into the night. Back in the drawing room, all the flames winked out. And a sudden, piercing cold clutched at all those left in the room, stunned into silence. Rain pouring through the open hole in the roof, and the single upturned ace of spades, the only physical evidence the devil had visited Loftus Hall. Anne Tottenham had to be carried from the wreckage at the drawing room.
So my thanks to everyone who has listened to whatever percentage of that 200 episodes that you have listened to. It's really been appreciated. Thanks to everyone who's made a contribution to the podcast, whether as a guest or somebody working on it since we launched a few years ago. And most importantly, I suppose, really, my thanks to those who listen every week. And there are some of you who have been in touch with me, and I appreciate all of those messages. And your continued listenership and lending of your ears is appreciated too. So thank you for 200, and I'll be back with you next week for 201.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.